A happy Sabbath, brethren. What a beautiful day we've got going on here today. I love this part of Missouri. We lived in northern Missouri there for a while. And up there they get real winter and, you know, real late fall where it gets cold. Sitting out on the front porch this morning, all I had on was a coat. It felt so nice. This is a gorgeous time of year. Today we're going to talk about a topic that is one of my favorites. But before we start, before we get into that, I want to read a segment out of a 2008 United News. And bear with me here. On Tuesday, February 5th, 2008, tornadoes struck the Mid-South. The hardest hit state was Tennessee. Most of the deaths occurred in the little town of Lafayette. While they were in it, the home of members Jimmy and Judy Law was completely destroyed. Before the tornado struck, the electricity went off, and Judy was no longer able to follow the progress of the tornado. About 10:30 p.m., so this is at night, about 10:30 p.m., Judy could hear what sounded like heavy rain coming. Then it came closer, and it began to roar. She knew it must be a tornado, so she ran to the bedroom where Jimmy was asleep and yelled, "It's coming!" Jimmy jumped out of bed and said, "What's coming?" It grew louder, and Judy said, "It's here." Jimmy quickly headed towards the kitchen. He felt what he thought was Judy's hand holding his. When he got to the kitchen, the roof lifted off the house, and the walls fell around him. The house is collapsing all around him. Back in the bedroom, Judy had dropped to the floor and grabbed the foot of the bed, hoping it would anchor her. Pieces of furniture fell, covering Jimmy and Judy. It didn't crush them, but formed pockets of safety all around them. The mattress lifted off the bed, but rather than flying off, it slid over Judy as a cushion. In the aftermath, Jimmy looked for Judy because he had felt somebody holding his hand when he went to the kitchen. But she wasn't with him. They called to each other, and he went back into the bedroom where he found her covered on the bedroom floor. What held Jimmy's hand? What held Jimmy and Judy down while the tornado destroyed their house? Why didn't they blow away? They knew God had saved them. They knew that. They knew it in their heart. Today, brethren, we're going to talk about something that, again, I think we'll all like the topic. We're going to talk about miracles. The miracles God does in your life, my life. The miracles we see. The miracles we don't see. Miracles he performed in the past. We're going to talk about, why doesn't God perform those same? Why doesn't he part the Red Sea today? Why doesn't he just stop all the violence that's taking place around this world? Just put an end to it. Why don't we see these major miracles that took place in the Bible? We can see it throughout the Old Testament, the miracles that took place. Have you ever gotten weak in your faith? Is this all right? I sacrifice my Saturday, every Saturday. I have to take off 3 weeks during the year or better just to observe the holy days. Everybody does things on Friday night. I mean, come on. Is this all worth it? Is this real? Is God real? When we start feeling like that, what is it that takes us and puts us back on track? And the title of today's message, it was, "Do we need a miracle?" And I've actually changed that title to say, "Does it take a miracle?" Does it take a miracle to get our attention? Does it take a miracle for us to truly believe God exists? I mean, after all, what do miracles do? Why did God perform miracles? So many miracles. I mean, big ones. I'm talking big miracles back in the Old Testament. And we're going to just kind of skim through a few of them. I'm not going to belabor it, but there were some pretty incredible ones out there. And people that were, I'm going to say, much stronger than I am, that were susceptible to not believing God or just not taking God for what he says. Start off in our first scripture. Let's go to Exodus, book of Exodus 4. And I'm going to start reading just a little bit here. We're just going to kind of skim through this. Exodus 4, and we've gone through, this is where Moses, and Moses is probably the most reluctant spokesperson or just advocate for the anybody, really. I mean, he's, I hate to say it, but Moses was kind of wimpy. He was. I mean, he says it himself. Okay. Then Moses answered and said, "But suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say, 'The Lord has not appeared to you.'" What if they start questioning anything I say to them? And he's supposed to be their advocate, their spokesman. In verse 2, "So the Lord said to him, 'What's that in your hand?' He said, 'A rod.' And he said," God said, "'cast it on the ground.' He cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent." What does Moses do? Whoa, wait a minute. You know, I mean, this is a miracle performed in front of Moses' face. He's standing there watching this rod, threw it on the ground, turns into a snake, I mean, did what any normal person would do, and jumped back. In verse 4, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Reach out your hand and take it by the tail.' And he reached out his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand, that they may believe that the Lord God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you." This is why he did it, to give verification that God exists. He performed this miracle for Moses at the time. Well, what did Moses do? Moses says, "Okay, I'll do anything you say from this point forward." And that's not what the story says. That's not how it continues. "Furthermore, the Lord said to him," okay, so if that's not going to work out, "furthermore, now put your hand on your bosom," and we know the story. He put his hand in the bosom, and we took it out. His hand was leprous, like snow. He's now diseased. And this happened, boom. Wow, what in the world? You know, Moses is kind of freaking out about this point. In verse 7, he said, "Put your hand on your bosom again." So he put his hand on his bosom again and drew it out of his bosom, and behold, it was restored. Man, he... breath of relief right here, right? So that got Moses' attention, and he says, "Okay, so I'll do everything you want me to from this point forward, and I won't question anything." Didn't happen that way. Did not happen that way. God has to continue to perform miracles to get even the most faithful of us, Moses. I mean, this is someone who knew God personally, and he's having doubts in his mind. And God is performing miracles to Moses. Okay. Let's see, where are we going now? I'm going to skip through a little bit of this. Let's drop down to verse 8. "And then it will be, if they do not believe you, nor heed the message of the first sign, that they may believe the message of the latter sign. And it shall be, if they do not believe even these two signs, listen to your voice, that you shall take water from the river and pour it on the dry land. The water which you shall take from the river will become blood on the dry land." And then Moses said to the Lord, "Whoa, wait a minute. Okay. "Oh, my Lord, I'm not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant, but I'm slow of speech and slow of tongue." What do you have me doing all this stuff for? I don't like this. You know, I mean, this is Moses. We all revere Moses. I'm going to drop down to verse 14. Because Moses is rejecting anything God's asking. In verse 14, "So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses." God's getting fed up. God's, "Okay, I've shown you, the rod, and I've done all these things, and you're still not getting it. Is not Aaron the Levite your brother? I know that he can speak well, and look, he is also coming to meet you. When he sees you, he will be glad in his heart." Verse 15, "Now you shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and I will teach you what you shall do. He shall be your spokesman to the people, and he himself shall be as a mouth for you, and you shall be to him as a God, or as God. And verse 17, and you shall take your rod in your hand, which you shall do these signs. So this is a powerful rod now that God has given to Moses to do all these incredible things. But, you know, Moses doesn't want this responsibility. He really doesn't. But, you know, you got it anyway. So let's go through some of the miracles. And these miracles, they're actually plagues. Anything that's done by God, anything miraculous, is truthfully a miracle by God. But miracles come in more than just one form. We have to learn to recognize, are these miracles from God? And as we'll get into later in today's message, they could also come from another place that we don't want it to come from. And we might be caught off guard, and we might fall for the hoax. Now, there were 10 plagues that God struck upon the Egyptians. And I'm just going to run through these real quick. We're not going to read all about them. I am going to stop on a few. And the first plague was waters became blood. The second plague was frogs, plague of frogs. Third plague was lice. The fourth was flies. The fifth, now it's starting to get a little worse, livestock die from disease. I really wouldn't want to go through this one. The sixth one was boils. We wouldn't really want to experience what the Egyptians had to go through, what God was putting them through, and Israel was safe from this. The seventh plague was hail. The eighth was locusts. And I want to touch base on this ninth one, because it's pretty fascinating. The ninth plague was darkness. And let's turn over now to Exodus 10. We're going to turn over to Exodus 10 and start reading verse 21. Exodus 10, 21, I'm going to read it out of my notes. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand towards heaven that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt. And this is where I find it fascinating, because I've never experienced this. Maybe you have. Darkness which may even be felt. I mean, I've not seen it. I mean, I've been in caves. You know, I've gone spelunking a little bit. You know, nothing too intense. Where you go in and there's absolutely zero light. But you can still feel, you know, I mean, you don't feel the darkness. This is, so they felt the darkness. This is pretty intense. So Moses stretched out his hand towards heaven, and there was thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days. But all the children of Israel had light. They were good to go. You know, their TVs worked or whatever. You know, I mean, they had power. They had light. They could see what was going on, but not with the Egyptians. Now, I stopped on the ninth plague. Let's go ahead and look at a little deeper into that tenth plague, because that tenth plague, I don't know how Pharaoh ever let it get to this point. You know, I think I would have stopped around two or three. You know, I mean, this guy just, he's a glutton for punishment. And we know that God hardened the heart of Pharaoh, which in essence is kind of a miracle in itself, because his heart was turned against anything. He was going to be a malcontent no matter what. But the 10th plague, and let's turn over to Exodus 12 now. Exodus 12, and I'm going to read verses 29 and 30. And it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon. And all the firstborn of livestock, even the cattle, all the firstborn of the cattle at this point. Verse 30, so Pharaoh rose in the night, he, his servants, and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not one house where there was not at least one dead. And you got to consider this. There were some big families back then, I'm sure. You know, and the firstborn of everything, of everybody, was taken, was dead. talking a great cry. This was an incredible, but I want to remind everyone here, this was done for a reason. We're going to get into the reason. Why did God do these things? You know, was he doing it just to terrorize Pharaoh? No. That really wasn't his motivation. He tells us what his motivation is. Now, let's continue. And we know that when God did all these things, performed all these miracles on Egypt, we know that his people, you know, the hang on just a second. We know that Israel, you know, they got it. They got it. We're going to follow God. This is God. We got the strongest God, and God is great, and we're going to just do anything he says from this point forward. That's exactly what we're going to do. I mean, you've got to put yourself in that position. You know, they just saw all these things happen to those who enslaved them, and all these things that your God, the God that you worship, wow, I'm going to do anything he says from this point forward. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to whine. Well, we get into the wilderness where God's going to do some things for, he's going to show his people out. And it came to pass, and this is actually Exodus 13, verse 17. Then it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go, so he kind of got it, that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although it was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. Basically, they didn't want, if they saw something that they didn't like, let's go back to what we know. You know, better the devil you know. You've all heard that. And we know Egypt, yeah, but we ate good. Wait a minute. That's not what it's all about. So God continues to lead his people through Moses, or by Moses and Aaron. And we're now getting to the part where Pharaoh, he still doesn't get it. So he's going to take all his troops, all of his chariots, all of his best men, all of his captains, he's going to put them all together, and he's going to start chasing them, because you can't take those people away from me. And he does this, and we get to the edge of the Red Sea. Oh, we got a problem, okay? Now we're in Exodus 14, and I'm going to just read a few scriptures here. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, and this is verse 1 of Exodus 14. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they turn and camp before Phi Harath, between Migdal and the sea, opposite Baal Zephon. You shall camp before the sea. And I'm just going to continue and drop down to, let's see, verse 10. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. They were very afraid. And this, when it says very afraid, they were shivering and they're shaking in their boots. They were terrified. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, because there was no graves in Egypt, you have taken us away to die in the wilderness. Why have you dealt with us? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us out of Egypt? Now they're disappointed they even left captivity. I mean, they're really getting to be kind of a problem here. Dropping down to verse 13, and Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. Now Moses is telling them what God's going to do. God's going to take care of this. Verse 14, and we've actually heard a little bit about this already today. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. Is that a miracle? God fighting for us? You know, when we get into situations in our own personal lives, we go to God. We ask God, and he should be part of every little detail of our life. That's what God wants to be. He wants to be part of who we are. He wants to be involved in our lives. Verse 15, and the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward, but lift up your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. But they don't believe this. They really don't. Now, what I find kind of cool about this is when we look back at the Old Testament, and we look back at the miracles and the things that God performed in sight of everyone. I mean, this isn't something where he's doing it, you know, behind a veil. He's making his miracles and the things he's doing for all of us blatantly obvious. It's in your face. I mean, we're going to do this. Verse 18 of Exodus 14, then the Egyptians shall know. This is why God does this. This is the answer to the question right here. Then the Egyptians shall know that I am the Eternal, when I have gained honor for myself over Pharaoh and his chariots and his horsemen. And the angel of God who went before the camp of Israel moved and went behind them, and the pillar, think about this, I want you to think about this, the pillar of cloud went before them and stood behind them. Verse 20, so it came between the camp and the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. Thus it was a cloud and darkness to the one, and it gave light by night to the other, so that the one did not come near the other all night. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. You're standing here. I want you to see, and we've got this big party of a couple million people, and Moses does his thing with the rod, and we watch this sea. I want you to think in your own mind and try to be there. How incredible of a miracle, and you're witnessing this. Physically, personally, you know, this is something tangible to the Egyptian, or to the, not to the Egyptian, well, to the Egyptians as well, but to the Israelites. So the children of Israel, verse 22, went into the midst of the sea on the dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on the right side and on the left side. Now, I want to go ahead and move a little bit forward. So let's drop down to verse 25. And he took their chariot wheel, and he took off their chariot wheels, so they drove them with difficulty. And the Egyptians, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians. Then the Lord said, and this is verse 26, the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the seas, that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians, on their chariots, on their horsemen. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and when the morning appeared, the sea returned to its full depth, while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. So the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. Dropping down to verse 31, thus Israel saw the great work which the Eternal had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. So they started getting it. At this point in time, they did. They watched their enemy be drowned, just totally washed away by God. So after that, they finally get it, right? They're going to do everything God says to do. They're going to be that perfect people that God's always wanted. It's not what happened. They got thirsty. And in Exodus 15, and you can read it for yourselves, in verses 22 through 26, and the people complained against Moses, saying, What shall we drink? God just saved you. He destroyed your enemy. He's led you through the sea. You saw the wall of water on either side, and you're worried. Okay, so I know none of us would do that. If we were in the same situation, we'd be sitting and we'd just be all on board with God, wouldn't we? So God, you know, he in his mercy, he provided sweet water for them, and they finally got the thirst taken care of. And what I'm doing is obviously paraphrasing through a lot of this that we already know. But we know after they got their thirst quenched, they were good, right? No, they're not good. Okay, so we get manna from heaven. But we know when God started feeding his people and performing this miracle, and these are constant miracles. You got a pillar of cloud, a pillar of fire. You see God's presence there every day and every night. You've got such evidence that you and I, folks, we don't have that. We don't see these kind of miracles today. But they've got it right in front of them. And we know that once they got that bread and their bellies were full, they were going to conform to whatever God wanted them to do. Why did God perform these miracles anyway? These people are not going to cooperate. They're just not going to cooperate. You know, today we don't see God parting the Red Sea for us. He's not leading us through the wilderness in some cases, and maybe he is in others, I don't know. But we're not being led through the wilderness, but in a sense we truly are being led through the wilderness. This world we live in today is pretty turbulent, to say the least. Let's look now, let's go ahead and we're kind of concluding with the Old Testament miracles, and there are many, many more I can refer to. The miracles of the Old Testament, they go on and on and on, and they're incredible to read. And these aren't just stories. These were put together for you and I, and they were put together for a reason. They're words for us all to live by. You know, what about the New Testament? Why did Jesus Christ perform as many miracles as he did in his lifetime? I mean, he only had a short, few years on this world, on this planet, as a physical entity. But he performed a lot of miracles, did a lot of things. And he tells us the reason why he does it. Let's turn over to the book of John. Look at some of the New Testament miracles that Jesus Christ performed. And why he performed them, why we see them. There it is. And John 2, let's turn to John 2. And we all know this story. This is actually the first documented miracle by our Savior Jesus Christ, where he guest at a wedding. And back then, even today, actually, weddings are a pretty big deal. I've been to some really, these are some big weddings, all kinds of fun stuff and food and drink. And let's go ahead and read the scripture, though. John 2 and verse 6. Now there were set 6 water pots of stone, according to the manner of purification of the Jews, containing 20 to 30 gallons apiece. Jesus said to them, "Fill the water pots with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Draw some out now and take it to the master of the feast." And they took it. In verse 9, "And when the master of the feast had tasted the water that was made to wine, he did not know where it had come from, but the servant who had drawn the water knew. The master of the feast called the bridegroom and said to him, 'Every man at the beginning sets out the good wine.'" So the tradition is you bring out all the good stuff. This is what we do all the toasts to, congratulations and everything else. And then after everybody's got a little bit of, wine in their belly and it starts running out, then they bring out the cheap stuff. That's the way they did it back then. Everybody partied into the night. But that didn't take place here. In verse 10, he said to them, "Every man at the beginning sets out the good wine, and the guests have drunk well. Then in the inferior," that's when they bring out the bad stuff, the rot gut. And when the guests have drunk well, then the inferior. You have kept the good wine until now. So Jesus Christ didn't just perform a miracle. He didn't just make wine out of water. He made the top shelf. He made the good stuff. Excuse me. Let me grab a drink of water. Mentioning that. Now, verse 11 really kind of gives us one of the reasons, or I would say the primary reason, why did Jesus Christ do this? Verse 11, this beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed him. His disciples believed him. Now, I want you to think about that statement right there. Okay, his disciples that he'd already chosen at this point, they didn't believe him before? What? They didn't believe? Okay, so, and his disciples believed him. Okay, no, what they did is they had verification. Prior to that, they had hope. They had a belief. They were called. Their eyes were open. But at the same time, we hope he's the Messiah. But, and his disciples believed him. And now we get it. We get it. This is the main reason why Jesus Christ performed that first miracle. Was it for the guests? I don't think very many of the guests really know. It doesn't really elaborate on how many of the guests knew that Jesus Christ even turned the water into wine. But his disciples did. And they believed, wow, this guy's for real. This guy's for real. And that was the primary reason. You know, we can go through the New Testament and we see all kinds of miracles. The man healed by the pool of Bethesda, you know, we all know about that, where he's sitting there and he can't get in the water. You know, I mean, he's been ailing from his infirmity, whatever the deal is, for many years, over 30 some odd years, and he can't get in the water. He can't get in there. Every time he tried to get in, somebody get in his way. And so in John 5, and we're going to I'm going to start reading in verse 5. A certain man was there who had infirmity 38 years. In verse 6, when Jesus saw him lying there and they knew that he had already been, that he'd been in that condition a long time, he said to him, I think this is kind of a weird question to ask a guy that's been in a weird condition. Do you want to be made well? Yeah, of course I do. The sick man answered him, sir, I have no man to put me into the pool where the water is stirred up. But while I am coming, another steps down. People keep getting in my way while I'm trying to maneuver my way to get into this pool. I just cannot do it. Jesus said, rise, take up your bed and walk. And immediately the man was made well. The man was made well. Now, that's just another one of Jesus Christ's miracles that he performed. He did many, many miracles throughout his time on earth. One of my favorites, I don't know about you, was, I loved this one as a kid, and I love this one as an adult. I mean, it's timeless, is when Jesus Christ fed so many people. I mean, this is where he's got a captive audience, so to speak. He's got 5,000 or so folks sitting around on this beautiful lawn. And in John 6, I'm going to go ahead and read a few scriptures out of this. John 6 and verse 4. Now the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near. Then Jesus lifted up his eyes and seeing a great multitude coming toward him, he said to Philip, where shall we buy bread that these may eat? And I love this. Verse 6. But he said this to test him. I mean, this is his disciple. He's saying this to Philip. But he said this to Philip to test him. For himself, and that he knew that, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may have a little. And one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there is a lad who has 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish. But what are they among so many of you guys? I mean, this isn't going to work. Now, there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, a number of about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, And when he had given thanks and distributed them to the disciples, and I want you to, he's doing this, he's handing this to the disciples. They're going to participate. This is a teaching moment for the disciples. They're going to participate in a miracle that Jesus is going to, that's performing in front of their eyes. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks and distributed them, and the disciples to those sitting down, and likewise of the fish, as much as they wanted. Hey, don't hold back. Fill your belly up. Get full. Verse 12, so when they were filled, he said to his disciples, gather up the fragments and remnants, so that nothing is lost. Therefore, they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the five barley loaves, which were left over by those who had eaten. Then those men, when they had seen the signs Jesus did, wow, why did he do this? Verse 14, then those men, when they had seen the signs that Jesus did, said, this is truly the prophet who has come into the world. These are his disciples participating in a miracle that are getting it. We're actually seeing the lights turn on right here. Wow, this is really Jesus. This is the Messiah. Now, again, we're going to go into just a couple more brief miracles. You know, there were big ones, there were small ones. You know, I don't know how we'd classify this one, but we see that Jesus walked on the water. He walked on the water in front of his disciples. We also know that Peter briefly, for a moment, walked on the water until he lost his faith. He lost his faith. He looked around and he saw all the, you know, the waves crashing around him. He got a little spooky and he dropped like a rock. But Jesus Christ, he did this to show them that he was truly the Messiah. And you can read this one for yourself. When a man that was born blind receives his sight, that's such an incredible event that takes place. To go through your entire life, all your life, and you've never seen the light of the sun at all. Nothing. You can feel the warmth, but you can never see that shine. And you can read this for yourself in John 9, verses 1 through 12. And what about raising, and this is just one, that Jesus Christ raised from the dead. Lazarus raised from the dead. How did he do this? Well, he did it in a weird way. He did it so everybody could see what he was doing. He didn't keep it under wraps. He really didn't hide it under a basket. He showed them that he was God in the physical form, that he truly had a connection. He was the Messiah. This is why he did this. Now, looking, making sure I'm not... Last time I did this message, and this is a rerun, by the way, I think I took an hour and 20 minutes and I was talked to about it. So I'm trying to flip some pages quick. I want to look at something else. And this is another miracle. In fact, actually, every one of you sitting here today, including myself, we're part of that miracle. We're part of it. But this is a different miracle. And this is a miracle where God blinds the minds of those that he does not want to have knowledge of his truth right now. And there is a reason for that as well. Let's turn over to 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians 3. 2 Corinthians 3, and I'm going to read verses 12 through verse 18. Therefore, since we have such hope, we use great boldness of speech. Verse 13. Unlike Moses, who put a veil on his face that the children of Israel could not look steadily at the end of what was passing away. This is where it gets interesting. Verse 14, but their minds were blinded. Their minds were blinded. This wasn't a natural state. They weren't blinded naturally. Their minds were blinded. For until this day, the same veil remains unlifted in the reading of the Old Testament because the veil is taken away in Christ. This shows the miracle of Christ himself, where The minds are clear. The blindness is taken away. If you ever want to see a miracle face to face, talk to somebody who has not been called to God's way of life. Talk to them about the scriptures that you see so clearly. Talk to them about the Sabbath. Talk to them about clean and unclean meats. The things that we take for granted and the things that we read in our Bible and understand so clearly, and they look at you like you're green. Huh? Brethren, we're part of God's miracle right here. We truly are. Now, do we need a miracle? Does it take a miracle for you and me to put God in a proper place where He is there for us? He wants to be part of every one of our lives. He wants to be part of every part of our lives. It says, the just shall live by faith. That's the key to it right there. The just shall live by faith. We are the just. We hopefully are the just. We should be living by faith. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7, for we walk by faith, not by sight. We shouldn't need a miracle, brethren. We shouldn't need anything but this book right here. The examples that we see around us, the things we read in this book where Jesus Christ and God the Father have performed so many miracles. And what dividends did the miracles of the Old Testament pay to the Israelites? Did they ever get it? Did they ever get it? Well, the Old Testament really doesn't end. It just carries over to the New Testament. They never really got it. Did those in the New Testament really get it? Well, you know, we're going to get into a little bit more of that here in just a moment. Galatians 3 in verses 10 through 11. For as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse. For it is written, cursed is everyone who does not continue in all things which are written in the book of the law to do them. But that no one is justified by the law in the sight of God, in the sight of God is evident. For the just, shall live by faith. We can see that even back in the Old Testament, Ezekiel 18 and verse 9. If he walked in my statutes and kept my judgments faithfully, he is just. That is the just person. He shall surely survive, says the Lord. Jesus Christ and God the Father perform miracles for several reasons. And the biggest reason is to get our attention, to allow us. And I want to go into some of the personal miracles that I've experienced in my life. Because we've got a tradition. I'll just kind of pause here for a moment. On Night to Be, we've got a tradition whenever we host. We go around and we ask everybody at the table, talk to us about miracles. Some people are nervous. They don't like to, you know, share those things. But once you get the conversation started, about miracles, wow, it takes off. It goes. And there was one example. My wife and I, we'd only been in the church a year. And we're coming home from church. I'm dressed probably close to what I am now. Maybe not quite nice a suit. But my wife's sitting next to me, and we're driving home. It's in Minnesota in the wintertime. And all of a sudden, cars all around us. Cars in front of us, cars behind us, cars beside us. And we're driving, snowing. All of a sudden, this Volkswagen Beetle, and it wasn't a well-running or well-tuned Volkswagen Beetle, starts spinning. And there's traffic everywhere. Lorelai, my wife, she puts her hands down, and we stop and we're heading in the right direction, and I'm stopped dead in the middle of the freeway. And we both look up. There wasn't a car at this side and that side. There wasn't a car behind me. And we both looked up, and there wasn't a brake light in front of us. Okay, so coincidence. It could have been, might have been, who knows. You know, there's a lot of things that happen to us that we claim are miracles that aren't. You know, it's just life. It's just circumstance or whatever. I prefer to think of this particular one as a miracle, because I'll tell you right now, I have no idea where those cars went, but they weren't there anymore. Another quick one, and why does God perform miracles? We had just come into the church, and this within our first year or so of coming into the church. And I don't know about you guys, but tithing for me at that time, we were living on a shoestring budget. That's tough. You got light bills, you got bills. And, well, I found out that my wife hadn't been sending in. She had been writing out the tithe checks, and she'd been putting them away, but we haven't sent out these tithe checks in about 6 weeks. I had no idea. And things were not going good at work at that moment in time. I mean, things were just seemed to be, why are things falling apart? Well, we talked about it, and as I recall the story, and we talked about this morning, we had the apartment building we lived at had a community outgoing mailbox. You know, this is where everybody puts their mail that's going somebody else. Then you had your own little personal mail lap where you could take your stuff out. So we prayed about it, and we dropped this tithe check envelope into the outgoing mailbox, walked over, took our key, and opened. And everybody here looks old enough to have received that manila envelope from the IRS, and then it's got kind of a green face on it where you can this is a check. So as we put the tithe check for X amount in the outgoing, and we get our incoming, there was a check for roughly 10 times the amount that I had no idea this check was coming. We both looked at each other. Okay, now, again, there might have been IRS checks in every one of those mailboxes. I don't know. Might have been coincidence that it just happened the same moment I prefer, and this is just my preference, I will always think of this as a miracle, because the profound impact it had on my life, my tithe check's going in the mail every week now. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Because this proved to me that God existed. Why does God perform miracles? Why did Jesus Christ perform miracles? He does it for our benefit. He does it so we can see that he's there. And if we don't get that, we got a problem. I've got to see what else I can cut now. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and skip that page, even though I don't want to. I will, just for the sake of time. I want to read from the church's booklet, Does God Exist? And I'm just going to read a short amount from it. God allows men to choose. And this is it right there. We're going to get down to the nuts and bolts of things. It was not God's idea to remove himself and be seemingly unapproachable. It was mankind's choice. Beginning with Adam and Eve, God gave humankind freedom of choice. He allows us to choose whether we will believe him, accept the knowledge he reveals, and obey him or not. God didn't force Adam and Eve to follow him and his instructions. They freely chose not to. Humanity has felt the repercussions of this fateful decisions ever since. Neither did God force ancient Israel to obey him. He clearly offered the Israelites a choice. This day I call heaven and earth as a witness against you, and I have set before you life and death, blessings and cursings. He told them, choose life so that you and your children may live. You can find that in Deuteronomy 30 and verse 19. With their own ears, they heard God at Mount Sinai. Yeah, they heard, and they got paranoid. They had witnessed miracle after miracle after miracle in the trek out of Egypt. Yet the Israelites quickly forgot the evidence and chose to disregard the way of life and blessings that God offered. You can also go ahead and jot down in your notes Deuteronomy 31:27. Yet some of the people who knew of Christ's miracles later later shouted for his blood. Think about that. These are some of the people that were called, that saw what Christ did. They were probably some of those that were sitting in that group of 5,000 men and women listening to his message as he fed them with his miracle. But what did they do? What did they do? They shouted for his blood. Jesus pointed out that some were so hardened toward God that they wouldn't accept him and his ways even if someone were raised from the dead. As we start concluding, brethren, I've only got a few more minutes here and about 14, 15 scriptures. And I'll be wrapping it up here. Is there really a devil? And this is another church booklet. Is there really a devil? Of course there is. We know there is. And do miracles only come from God? I'd like to say yes. Now, Satan does things that are very, very, he can do some things that are miraculous. Yeah, they're, wow. After all, if we think about Satan himself, he was created as an angel of light. Do you think it's hard for him to look nice and pretty today and perform those miracles? We're all going to fall for it. Not all of us. Now, I wouldn't say we're going to fall for it. We are susceptible to fall for it because it says he's going to come and he's going to betray the earth. He's going to deceive even the elect if we let him. Now, from the church's booklet, is there really a devil? Satan will have a direct hand in the rise of a great leader who will play a pivotal role in a massive end-time religious deception. Writing of this event preceding Christ's return, Paul tells us that the day will not come unless the falling away comes first and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. This man opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshiped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. How can such a person claim to be God and convince others to believe him? Paul adds to that, the coming of the lawless one will be in accordance with the works of Satan or work of Satan displayed in all kinds of counterfeit, listen to this, counterfeit miracles, signs, and wonders. We've got to have our eyes open. Is it from God or isn't it? Is it from Satan or is it from God? Because we are vulnerable. We can be deceived along with the rest of the world. Continuing on, these powerful miracles will convince many, but in reality, they are deceptive handiwork of Satan. Regrettable, this man's deception will take in millions of people. This should be a sobering warning to all of us. If we don't love the truth, if our beliefs are not firmly grounded in the truth of God's word, and we do not have the strength of character to hold fast to them, we also could easily fall prey to this or other satanic deceptions. It's happened before, and both Jesus and Paul assure us it will happen again. Now, I'm going to conclude right here, folks, with something that Don Hooser posted to the church's website on March 23rd, 2011. So you can actually look it up. It's still out there. It was called The Miracle of Miracles, right? Many miracles are not overtly or conspicuously spectacular, even though immediately apparent. Seldom are there fireworks that makes a miracle obvious to all. God usually chooses to work invisibly and quietly behind the scenes, steering events to bring about the results he has predetermined, often in surprising ways. Anytime God intervenes in the affairs of men, even when he is working with his laws, we call it miraculous or provident. Yeah, thank you. Sometimes you get tongue-tied. However, miracle of miracles, in spite of the Bible's great diversity, there is perfect unity. It is consistent and coherent all the way through. If we need to see a miracle in our lives, then all we need to do, and I said this earlier, is have a conversation with somebody who hasn't been called about the things God has revealed to us. We can see that miracle firsthand. How many times have we had that conversation with somebody we think we're getting through because we see it so clearly? Right here. Let me show you. I don't know where you get that. That's done away with. Okay, so after a while you give up. So brethren, does it take a miracle for us to truly recognize the awesome power of our Creator? Does it take a miracle? It shouldn't take a miracle. But God knows exactly what we need, and He will provide that miracle when we need it.